In 2005, FBI agents in Washington, D.C. put a tracking device on a car registered to Antoine Jones and followed his movements with GPS. They suspected Jones of distributing narcotics, and the tracking device eventually led them to his stash. Afterwards, a federal appeals court threw out Jones' conviction because the FBI's use of the tracker, it said, violated his Fourth Amendment rights. Today, the Supreme Court heard arguments in that case. We'd like to hear from you. How does new technology change the debate over privacy and security? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. David Savage covers the Supreme Court for the Los Angeles Times and the Chicago Tribune, and he joins us from his office here in Washington. David, always nice to have you on the program.
I do.
And this case, the Fourth Amendment protects against unreasonable search and seizure. The government argued it did not need a warrant to put a tracking device on this this man's car.
Yes, that's right. The sort of citing the sort of long-established law that the Fourth Amendment protects privacy where you have a reason to be private. That is, they can't come into your house, and if you're talking on the phone, although not a phone call like this, but if you're talking on a normal phone call, your assumption is that no one's listening. But when you walk down the street or you get in your car and drive around town, you're in public, and the government could put an agent behind you to follow you. And so the argument in this case is they said, what's the big deal? You have no right to privacy when your car moves on the highways. Therefore, there's no Fourth Amendment concern about tracking a car for a month with a GPS device.
And the other side argues that you're getting a whole different quality and quantity of information from a GPS that you would never get from an agent.
Yes, and it wasn't just the other side, Neil. It was John Roberts making that argument and Sam Alito. The interesting thing about this argument was how much Roberts and Alito and Stephen Breyer and Ruth Ginsburg, both liberal and conservative justices, said, wait a minute, you know, if we go along with that argument, the government can use a monitoring device to monitor everyone going everywhere, and with computers, you could keep databases on huge numbers of persons. You couldn't literally track. You know, the FBI wouldn't have thousands of people being tracked every day or hundreds of thousands of people, but that's the new world. Maybe that's how the technology could be used. John Roberts, very early in the argument, said, well, what if you wanted to put a GPS monitor on our cars and monitor us for a month? Is that okay? And Michael Dreeben, the attorney for the government, said, you mean the justices of this court? And he said, yes, that's who I mean. And Dreeben said, well, under your cases, that would be permissible. And so the whole tenor of the argument was that the justices do not like the idea of a totally open-ended power to monitor and track people.
And, of course, you're saying they could put devices and track us all. Most of us carry devices in our pockets that can be used to track us.
Yes, that's right. One of the sub-issues in this case was that they attached this little GPS to the fellow's Jeep. And it's possible they may end up with a narrow ruling that says the government went too far when they attached the GPS, but we're not going to decide the bigger question of, as you said, well, what if they use your own cell phone technology to track you? I think a number of them want to reach that question. I will say by the end of the hour, it was unclear what type of limiting principle they're going to adopt. Because on the other hand, they don't want to say, if the government has some reason to think that a few people are involved in wanting to, let's say, bomb the Metro or bomb the Washington Monument, and we don't know for sure, but we're suspicious, and we want to track some of these people, the Supreme Court doesn't want to say you can't track somebody until you have proof they're involved in a crime. So I know they don't want to go down that road too far the other way.
This has been described as maybe the most important Fourth Amendment case in many, many years.
Yes, and of course, like a lot of these, it sort of depends on, we will know when it's over with, of what they decide. I think, though, I will say one possibility that came up in the middle of the argument was not picked up on is some sort of reasonable suspicion standard. Elena Kagan said, well, you know, if you go to London, there are all these cameras that would track you everywhere you are in the public, and that seems to be standard. Somebody else said, but the GPS is different because you're picking out an individual and tracking him. And one possible standard would say the government can do that only if they have some reason to believe that, suppose it's you or me, suppose it's Neil Conan, we have some reason to believe that Neil's involved in some plan. We don't know for sure, and so let's monitor. So that standard would say you can't do it for everybody. You can't do it routinely. You can only do it when they have some real reason to believe this person is involved in whatever it is, a drug conspiracy or a terrorism plot.
Well, if they have reason to believe, can't they go to a judge and get a warrant?
That's a good question, Neil, but usually the answer would be no. If you have probable cause, if you have reason to know that somebody says, I can testify this guy has been involved in selling drugs or whatever, then you've got probable cause. But what if you just heard a tip that 5 or 10 people who've come to Washington and we think they might be up to something suspicious, we just don't know what it is, you wouldn't have probable cause to believe they're committing a crime. You just have a suspicion.
We want to hear from callers, too. How does new technology change the debate on privacy and security? 800-989-8255. Email us talk at npr.org. Let's start with, this is Paul. Paul with us from Panama City.
Hey, Mr. Conan, it's good to speak to you again.
Okay, good to have you back. Go ahead.
The technology changing the debate is, it won't do so quite so much if we remember what the Fourth Amendment is about. See, the current government, the government's current case is a bit of political sophistry based on the belief that the Fourth Amendment is about privacy. It's not about privacy. If you look at original intent, you see that the Fourth Amendment, the First, the Second, the Fifth, almost all of them were built into the Constitution to prevent government intimidation of citizens. When you look at this case from that viewpoint, government intimidation versus no government intimidation, it's very clear what the Founding Fathers would have said about this case, and allowing ourselves to get down the road of privacy versus non-privacy clouds the issue.
David Savage, did that come up in today's arguments?
Well, yes. Justice Scalia made a version of that argument. He said he didn't like the sort of reasonable expectation of privacy doctrine that came in the late 60s. Let me see. The original view that Scalia was endorsing was that the Fourth Amendment was about things like protecting your home, your papers, something like that. In other words, protecting a place. The police couldn't go into your house. They had this famous case in the late 60s where a bookie is on a street in Los Angeles making phone calls, and the court overturned its decisions and said that kind of wiretapping is unconstitutional, is a Fourth Amendment violation, because the Fourth Amendment protects people, not places, and when you're talking on a phone, in a phone booth, you expect it's private. So ever since then, they've had this privacy view. To go back the other way would be to say the Fourth Amendment protects you against the government coming in your house, maybe rifling around the inside of your car.
Well, wasn't there a case a few years ago where they were using thermal imaging to look inside people's houses, and the Supreme Court said, no, that you can't do that. That's Fourth Amendment violation.
Yes, it was a Scalia opinion. And that case, Neil, it sort of depended on what you thought was, this was a situation where they had a thermal imager in the house growing marijuana. It was putting out steam. Justice Scalia said, that's really looking inside of somebody's house, and therefore it violates the Fourth Amendment. Justice Stevens, who's one of the more liberals, says, no, it isn't. It's just recording the heat waves that come out of your house. It's like smells wafting out of the kitchen. And he said it wasn't a Fourth Amendment violation. But, yes, you're right. The question was, if it goes into the house and sort of spies on you into the house, then they said you need a search warrant.
Paul, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. Let's see. We go next to, this is Lisa. Lisa with us from Pensacola.
Hi. I was just listening to your caller right before I came on. He had a very good point, but it also raises a question. If you're doing something wrong in the privacy of your own home, it's not really technically wrong until you get caught. Is that really what we're looking at? Is that the issue we're looking at?
Well, it's still wrong, but they can't prosecute you because they will have no evidence.
Well, I mean, they do have evidence. I mean, he's grown marijuana in his house. I mean, how much more do you need?
Well, it was just that particular method of discovering that fact was unconstitutional. His rights were violated.
That's right. That absolutely should be changed. I have no qualms with someone. I have nothing to hide. My life is an open book. I don't understand people who live... I understand people's personalities are very private. There's some things, of course, that I would like to keep to myself. But if it helps, a case, a criminal case, a situation involving my family, a social situation that needs to be solved, all of that information should be opened up to whoever, you know, whatever authorities need to know it. I really don't believe in hiding things. I'm a healthcare professional. I even have problems with HIPAA. I have a real few problems with HIPAA, simply because I believe that we've put ourselves in a situation where we've become so private that in the event that something were to happen to me, let's say my husband's not a healthcare professional, but I am, no one would have access to my medical record except for him if something's not spelled out, you know, clearly. On all of my medical records, I have get written in very large letters, no restrictions on who has access to my medical records. I have nothing to hide. Now my friends, my family, my coworkers who are physicians, other physical therapists, and other healthcare professionals can come in and help make a decision for me if I were in a life and death situation versus leaving it up to my husband and my doctor. Do you understand where I'm going with this?
I do, Lisa. Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Here's an email. This we have from Carrie in New York. Let's also consider how this can protect us. I think, what if I was kidnapped and went missing? So there's a view on that side. And this from Hank in Fernandina Beach in Florida. If you think the writers of the Constitution would have agreed it was okay for the government to attach a device to your horse to let the government know where you were at all times, then you have no concept of their ideas on government intrusion. I'm not sure how that computes. And what was the intent of the Fourth Amendment at issue today in the oral arguments?
Well, there was your previous caller was talking about her view of privacy being a little different from other people's views. Sam Alito brought up a really interesting point about that, is that, you know, that views of privacy are so much in flux that he said, I don't know what it's going to be like 20 years from now. You know, it seems to be the case with Facebook or whatever. I mean, he said it may be the case that most people have, you know, 500 friends on Facebook, and that the Facebook, they track each other every moment of the day, and they know everything about their conversations, that privacy, the whole notion of privacy is constantly changing. And I suppose that sort of argues for, to some degree, a Scalia-like view, is that the Fourth Amendment can protect certain private places or private situations. You know, as I say, the classic is, we don't want government agents to come into your house, an apartment or whatever, unless they have real reason, a search warrant, a real reason to believe something, there's some crime going on. But on a public street or in a public space, maybe there's no such privacy concern at all.
And the person may, in fact, be tweeting it or broadcasting it on Foursquare. So
that's right.
You never know. David Savage, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil.
David Savage, the Supreme Court reporter for the Los Angeles Times and the Chicago Tribune. He joined us today from his office here in Washington. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.